something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on TNT,
we do a deep dive on what it's like behind the scenes at summer music festivals.
We've recorded a summer banger called Terry Got Wasted.
And the countdown is on for the Bud Bus to JFL. That's all coming up right now on TNT. There he is.
Hey, Bud.
What's going on, Bud?
What's going on?
I'm going to tell you some 47 minutes ago, the O'Tooles of Dan O'Toole fame pulled out of our driveway.
Nice.
I saw Dan O'Toole pull out of our driveway in an RV Easy rented RV, family on board, headed for Cape Breton. Here's, O'Toole is sneaky funny, and I know you've said this before. So the O'Tooles arrived, whatever, Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Bit of barbecue, swim, a couple drinks, some good times, go to bed. I ran them some power for the RV in my driveway. They set up, put the slides out, put the awning out, put the mat out. Their shoes are on the mat. Like, they're bunked down.
Dialed.
In the morning, I come out to take Henry out on the lawn to use the bathroom, and I hear, "Hey, get off my lawn!" He's yelling at me from the front window of his RV for me to get off his lawn. That's funny.
Yeah, that's great. Yes.
So we did the Nova Scotia summer combo, Halifax Boardwalk cows for an ice cream. Went for a rip on the boat, towing the tube behind with the girls on it.
Yeah.
Pool swims, campfire, cocktails, like low-key Nova Scotia summertime hangs.
And he's a good hang. He's always
a good hang. Yeah. He's I didn't know him as well as you do, but yeah, super easy to be around. Very low-key, funny. Was great.
And it's his July is his summer of Dan, where he's just like going full tilt. He's like Amsterdam last week. He's going to Cape Breton, like he's
Amsterdam.
Just yeah,
yeah, he's ripping, and he's a good dad, and his girls are nice, and it was nice to see summertime Dan in the summer of Dan.
Yeah, yeah. I hope to see him up at the cottage. I know I'll see him at my golf tournament on the 29th.
Yes, it's getting right there, bud.
Yeah, so that'll be good times right there. Can't wait to see everybody.
Who's coming this year?
Well, you are, right?
Yes, I don't have it booked yet. It's currently potentially a shoot day for Your Two Cents, but I hope to.
Yeah, well, I mean, hopefully you'll be there. We're obviously, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. It's not the end of the world, but, you know, we have, like, I think we just found out there's like over 40 celebs coming.
Wow.
Like, we got obviously your Landsbergs and your Brian Hayes's and your O-Dogs. They're
awesome.
All coming, but also like Shifley's coming.
No way.
Yeah, we have our boy Luke Gadzik will be there again.
Wicked.
There's a bunch of hockey players coming. It's going to be a great tournament. I'll have a clear and concise list once we get into it and have the tournament of who showed up. But it's like a Mansbridge is coming this year.
No way.
We got lots of, Gordon Paul from the Hip. Obviously, I think Cochran, our boy. Gil Moore, who just got into the Canada's Walk of Fame.
Yeah.
Triumph. They just made it in there. He'll be there. You know it's going to be a good time. It's always a good time.
Gilmore, who, by the way,
best ways. Yep.
Has been so generous with us on our record.
Yes.
Because Tim is a graduate of Metalworks, which is Gil's studio. And Gil has been very helpful, instrumental, actually, in us getting
this record made.
And such a bud. And really,
he has been.
More than what he's given us, the fact that he gets it and is psyched for this comedy record to come out, like we played him a couple tracks and he's like, yeah, I totally get this, That was a very confidence-instilling exchange with him, because he's obviously been around a long time and really gets it.
Totally, for sure.
He's also one of those guys, and again, you know him better than me, but he drops really useful, helpful nuggets.
Yeah.
Like, if you listen closely to him talk, he's very generous with his knowledge.
Definitely, for sure. Yeah.
Remember him talking...
It's always good to hang with him.
Yeah. Remember him talking about touring and Triumph, and they realized that... Was it 2 weeks was the sweet spot? 2 weeks out, 1 week home? That's the way to keep it going with your life and work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people probably wouldn't know that how much of a kind of entrepreneur he was from the early days to see as he was like the production of all that, the lights and the sound and all that stuff he had when Triumph was on the road, he had already started that company.
And really?
To have the vision of like to take a company from just kind of taking care of sound and lights for live artists to envisioning his school where, you know, you can go and learn about becoming anything from a sound engineer to a tech or just anything about the music business that you could think of. And all of those classes are all packed and they've been for years and they just keep on growing and growing. So
awesome.
He's a visionary in terms of, taking an idea and running with it.
I mean, he's
been there since the early 80s, I think. Late 70s, they bought that property and it's just off the 403 there in Mavis. And it just keeps on expanding from unit to unit.
Well, yeah, because now there's all these, like, Boy Wonder Murder Beats types, right? Like, every genre of music, those guys, they are going to learn how to produce records. And even though the technology has changed to make himself relevant over the last 30 years when there have been so many advances or changes in technology, that says a lot about his entrepreneurial spirit for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And music, how hard is it to make a buck in the music industry? It's difficult enough.
We're about to find out, bud.
Oh, yeah. Well, guess what? We're final touches have been laid on our, well, I guess we could just say it, our summer banger, bud.
Yeah.
We can't wait to get this thing out the oven.
Are we allowed to say what it's called?
Yeah. I can't see why not. Yeah. I guess we should maybe conceptually talk about what's going on a little bit.
Okay.
What the record is. Like, I mean, we've completed all the songs. There's 10 songs, and they're all 10 different characters and caricatures of characters portrayed on the pod. But we finished the last, but the first single on the record, which was called Terry Got Wasted.
Yeah,
and that's our jam. That's like the TNT jam on the record.
Which is kind of crazy because all the characters you might expect are on there. Andrea and Gino and Joe and Byron. All those people.
Gord,
of course. Yeah. But we wanted to... we were talking to Dynalone about, can we put a single out? Because we're really excited. And they said, if you guys have a summer banger, that would really help things. I mean, can we tell the whole story? Why can't we?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. So the song's called Terry Got Wasted.
Well, I mean, I think the long story short, honestly, of what it is just by them mentioning we needed kind of something to follow things up, and it was summer. Perfect. We just kind of, well, let's talk about the fact that we were going to Halifax anyway to do the show with Classified.
Yeah.
So we carved out some studio time, invited our bud Adam Baldwin, who plays with Matt Mays, to come in and play guitar and whatever else for us. And we just kind of said, let's see what we can come up with, basically. And we actually came up with a really great song, in my opinion.
In my opinion, too, it's so catchy. The gist of Terry Got Wasted is that it's about that one friend, like all the buds get together at the lake and it's going to be a great weekend. And then there's that one guy who gets too banged up. And it's like if everyone else is at the lake, Terry is the guy who's at Club Med, all you can drink. Yeah. and gets banged up during the day, and it's kind of a shopping list of all the things that Terry does, like gets covered in food and caught on fire and disappears and all that stuff.
He's just that guy that, like, you really question why you invited, but
you secretly love, and that's part of the show every summer, is that, you know, Terry's gonna go buck wild.
Exactly.
Because everybody can relate to a friend like that.
Yeah, and so that's how we're leading off the TNT album, and we're super excited. Like, it's going to be probably dropping in the next couple months, right?
Yeah.
Or I guess November, I guess. Yeah. With a single coming hot, man. A single coming in weeks.
Like a single in August and with a video. Yeah. And then a single in probably October.
Yeah. An album.
So maybe two singles before the album comes out.
Yeah. Well, we have Terry Got Wasted, and we also have the score sitting on deck, which people can't, they'll have a great time hearing Gordon Lightfoot, his diss track against Bruce Coburn.
Yeah. It's the beef that Canada didn't know it needed. And all I'm saying is, Gord is coming swinging at hard for Coburn.
Yeah, he's throwing haymakers.
The reason it's funny is because it is, first of all, not true. And second of all, like, so out of character for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'll have to record a Coburn, like, diss back track.
like the time that they were in that the cottage together at Ronnie Hawkins' cottage.
Yeah, Toolsy was talking about that yesterday. Hawkstone Manor, it sold finally.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
I wonder who bought it and what's going to happen.
Probably carve it up, because it was quite a few acres, right? And the house was a knockdown. It started at 9 million. Yeah. I think it was under 4 by the time it was still listed. So, so that was my Canadianity encounter in the last few days. But tell me about yours, because I saw pictures of you and some staples.
Well, I mean, there's that Canadianity. Just even before that, I have to mention what happened this morning, like before the pod, right? That's some hardcore Canadianity right there.
Let's hear it.
We took down the fence in the backyard, and we're redoing a fence. And I guess people remember that the house was for sale, but I took it off the market in the fall, and just because the market kind of died a little bit just as we were about to sell, so it's like, well, this is a stupid idea at this point. So we took it off, and then we're just fixing up the backyard and adding a fence and stuff by the water. And in the backyard this morning, I look and there's like 15 to 20 Canada geese just like walking around in the grass and like chewing up stuff. I'm like, okay, this can't happen right now. So I get Rebel, who's a trusty bird chaser, books out, and they all split right away, which was fine. But then he's at the water line kind of barking at them, and they're going away, but not too far. And Lisa goes out, and I was on the phone with my boy Bob Travis, actually, at the time.
Oh, nice.
So I was on the phone in my room, so my attention wasn't completely there. At this point, when I saw Lisa, I saw, well, she's out there. She's got the situation under control. I figured she'd just grab Rebel and come back in. But then I'm like talking to Bob, and he's telling me about the golf tournament. And then I look out, and all of a sudden I see Lisa's like hip wading into the water. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And I look, and there's Rebel going out after the geese.
No.
Yeah.
What was she wearing?
She was just wearing like
a dress or something, or shorts?
No, like, you know, like, I guess comfortable pants. Like, not like workout pants, kind of, in a way. But anyway, she was like past the dock, and Rebel wasn't coming back. I figured she was, because I was on the phone. I was like, what the hell's going on? I thought she might even be like just enjoying it almost, because it just looked kind of peaceful while she was walking with.
Nope.
But I'm like, not at all. But Rebel finally came back and they went in and she had to put him right in the shower and get herself dialed. It was.
Is the water swimmable?
It is, but I would go out into the middle and jump off for swimming, just because there's a lot of houses around it, and I am sure that they don't test the water on a regular basis, so I wouldn't swim around the shoreline. But you're okay if you go out into the middle and swim.
Reason I asked what she was wearing is because I wasn't sure if she was like
ready
dressed,
for that.
Makeup yeah. dialed, she, like headed somewhere for work or something,
no.
And then, or if she was in kind of cash stuff.
Yeah, no, it was cash, more cash for sure. But the fact that she had to come back in and hit the shower, but that's pretty Canadianity.
Super
running out after geese in the lake.
Well, especially like
in the morning.
We went out this morning and Henry was barking his head off at the German Shepherd across the road. Like, Henry, you're 4 pounds, bud. Same with Rebel chasing all the geese. Like, what's your plan? Beyond that, what's your plan? Chasing them. Little dogs don't realize their size, bud.
No, they don't. So the other part two of Canadianity was I played in the Smile Zone charity golf tournament. And Smile Zone is a charity where they help kids with cancer in hospitals and areas just to kind of better their areas and make their life easier when they're dealing with obviously major issues. But the tournament was unbelievable. It was a great time. There's every kind of NHL player and person you could imagine, from all the bods from Elliot Friedman, Ron McLean, to hockey players like Mike Krzyzewski.
No way.
Paul Gardner, Paul Henderson was there. Gilbert Dion, Greg Gilbert, Noodles McLennan was there. Gord Stellick was there. Obviously, Gil Moore was there, who's a, you know, Colton Orr, Doug Favell, Erica Howe from Team Canada, Doug Pate, just on Carly Koliakovo is on TSN now. A bunch of TSN bods were there for sure, too.
Which ones?
And obviously, I think this Adam Graves has a lot to do with the charity.
Oh, you said Gino Retta was there, too.
Gino Retta was there. Bill Derlego. How classic is that one?
I don't even know who
Can't
he
go
is.
Wrong. Bill Derlego is a classic. Jim Lang, our bud. John Shannon. Mark Osborne.
Everyone.
Classic. Yeah, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding when everyone... As I was driving in there, I see and there's a freaking helicopter leaving. So you know when there's helicopters leaving where you're going? It's happening.
Who came by helicopter?
I don't know, but I'm sure it was some big folks. But what a time.
It's almost better to not know. Jim Lang is a super bud for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, he was telling me he ran into you at the airport.
Yeah, well, we had a meal together in Truro.
You did a book exchange, and he said he appreciated the book, which was nice. So did Ron McLean. He said he appreciated the book, too.
Oh, nice.
Bots. Yeah. That was, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, right. Because when they were in Truro and we went to shoot that thing with Tara at the corn maze,
That's
we gave
right.
them a couple books for her and Ron.
There you go. You know, we read it. That's good.
You know what the bots want to know?
What blew me away about Ron was like he was doing the emceeing for the event. And, you know, when you see him on TV just throw out, like, tidbits of players' history, you think it's like, okay, yeah, you know, we just read up
scripted.
On that. But, yeah. Like, he was just rambling. Someone would say something about a player, and he would just know everything about the person. He's really, I guess he's kind of our Bob Costas with baseball, is what Ron McLean is to hockey. Just, you can't.
No question.
There's no getting around his knowledge of the history of the game. It's just absolutely encyclopedic.
Well, and that's why I pity anyone who ever tried to step into his footsteps. Like, you can't.
Yeah. Yeah, the only guy that I know that's younger that knows like that is Jeff Merrick. He's kind of like the same ballpark of knowledge. And it's
is
like,
he?
You know how rare that is.
But super, like, rare.
I would say Jeff is probably the only other guy that I'm like, what? You didn't just go Google that and come back here? How did you know that? I mean, well, I'm not like a super knowledgeable hockey guy, but like, it just blows my mind the amount of information that, well, even Elliot Friedman, same thing. Like, he just, it's just banks of knowledge and of like stuff.
And Friedman knows a lot. Young and
college stuff and high school information, just crazy.
This is the thing that makes Ron stand out, though. There are a lot of statisticians and people with that encyclopedic knowledge of the game. There are a lot of great broadcasters who are good at conveying information that, you know, might not even be theirs, or they're just reading it. Ron can put those two things together like very few others.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Off the top of his head, likable, articulate. Yeah. And any crew guy will tell you, Ron, we need 90 seconds. No problem. Which, if you've ever hosted anything like live TV or live radio, do you know how long 90 seconds can feel if you are tap dancing?
It is
an eternity.
Yeah, that's up there.
And
crazy.
And by all accounts, too, he is also like internal clock. If you tell him 90 seconds, he can kind of count himself down in his head as he's talking, which is just bananas.
That's like the hit the post legends.
So how did you play, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Hey, and that feels like you fed me the thing. We won 15 under our group.
How many under?
Scramble. 15 under. We won.
Who was on your team?
I had bods from a bunch of bods from Windsor.
Nice.
I'm trying to remember the see, now you're killing me with names.
Was it Airbnb and Steve?
Mark, Tyler, Jeff. See, that's pretty good. That's not bad.
There
I
you
think
go.
Those are the names. If not,
Marco,
those
Tyler,
bods
and Jeff.
Will give it to me. They were actually from Windsor, and they knew like a couple of the guys from the tea party. So there was a pretty good history there for like for stories and great fodder for a 6-hour round. It was fun.
Breaking news in this very moment, and then we'll take a break maybe. You know, ba-doop dip.
Dippa 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 dubba 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 dubba. Yeah.
Yeah. So Chris Barron.
What? Weren't you? From, wait a second. Yeah. From Spin Doctors, who does. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. We follow each other on the Twitter machine.
Yeah. Me too.
He is, if not the architect of Catterday, he's very engaged with Catterday content.
He really is, to the point where I've actually, like, I like cats, but, like, I've thought about maybe mute skis on
Too
Saturdays.
Too much with the cats?
Well, it's like it's nonstop. There's probably 1,000 tweets of cats.
So this was my pitch to him this morning. Would you consider laying down a cover of the Bay City Rollers Classic, Catterday Night?
Yeah.
Catterday Night. He just wrote back, haha, but imagine the video for Catterday Night with that beat. It would be incredible.
Like Catterday Night, and it's Chris Barron?
Catterday. Does he throw some doobity bops? Night. Sure, he can do whatever he wants. The point
He's
is,
Chris
Catterday
Barron.
Night as a song and video would travel far. That's all I'm saying.
I saw the Spin Doctors a couple times.
Where?
Just like, I saw them once at Canada's Wonderland.
You bought a ticket and you went, or you happened to be there, or you guys were playing, or what?
No, it was a great bill. It was them, Screaming Trees.
Wow.
And Soul Asylum. Remember Soul Asylum?
Yeah, of course.
Runaway Train, all those jams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Runaway Train are coming back.
Yeah, and the Two Princes was just pounding. So it was a big show. 10,000 people at Kingswood. Great show.
So you went there to see the show?
Yeah. I was just a kid enjoying the concert, yeah, in the lawn.
So you weren't in OLP yet?
I think we just started. Yeah, we had started for a year or two at that point.
I was going to say, there's no way Badoo Badip was before OLP.
No, I think I got tickets actually from Sony, because that was a Columbia kind of bill. All those bands were on the same label we were. So there you go. No, it was definitely...
Spin Doctor's cover band name, Badoo Badip, would be incredible.
That is good. Badoo Badip.
Little Miss Candy Rock.
Badoo Badip Dop. So my son's been really busting my balls about a phone. Like, gotta have a phone. I'm like, I'm not a fan of the kids having the phone. But he's always kind of going to his friends all the time. So the actual, you can't get a hold of me with my iPod because I need Wi-Fi. So that's starting to become actually like, the security part of it is like, I guess we should think about it, right? Because he's always out and he's responsible. He's not the type of kid to he doesn't play video games too long. You know what I mean? He's really good like that. So anyway, by winning that tournament, I won some fancy phone, like some $1,000 phone with the thing. So it ends up killing two birds. I don't have to buy Jack
a
phone. Yeah. About that.
What kind of phone?
I don't even know. It's like an Android. I didn't look at the box, but like apparently it's $1,000 and it's swank.
So is he psyched?
Good camera. Yeah. But saving that. How about that? Who knew that golf would somehow pay the bills?
So how old is he?
Jack is 11. He'll be 12 and on Halloween.
Crazy.
Krazza train.
Now he has a phone.
Let's take
a break, and when we come back, I want you to talk me through, because we were talking about it briefly the other day, what a day at a summer festival is like from your perspective. Because you guys, the Somersault Tour was yours, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk about like the bands that were on it and what time you arrive and how it works and how much hang time you have, because I think that's
summertime.
Really interesting.
Summertime summer festival chatter?
Yeah. Plus, we'll talk about the Bud Bus and our JFL thing, and we have another exciting announcement coming up in the next few days, too.
That's right. We are just
TNT
like...
TNT is and bumping.
It's bumping in summer, too. Like, I'd say, like, July, August is going to be... Is our kind of, like, this is full-on summertime TNT.
Summer bumping. Get
your shirts off.
TNT shirts tarps off. Tarps off for shirts TNT. Off. We'll be right back.
Hey, Bob. Let me ask you this right quick. You know what I mean?
The summer, year summer, is summer. What? Summer, when was Somersault?
1998.
Who conceived of the idea and why?
Well, it came from Edge Fest, which was a first. It was Edge 102 in Toronto would do a festival. Sometimes on Canada Day or sometimes, but it was at the Forum. And it was just always a bunch of cool bands.
Did you guys play that?
We did. Yeah, we did. We did what we said, let's take it across the country. Let's not just do Edge Fest in Toronto only. So I think through the promoters and the agencies and everybody, we just realized that we could probably, because Clumsy was so successful, that we could kind of headline a successful summer tour, not just in Toronto. So Edge Fest went across the country and was all the football stadiums across the country. So it was like 40,000 people everywhere. And it was great. It was huge. And we're like, well, okay, great, let's do this again, but we don't want it to be Edge Fest. We want it to be something else, like a different kind of thing. We just felt that the, you know, outside of Toronto, what the hell does Edge Fest mean? And everything was called Edge Fest festivals. Right. So we just decided to have our own festival, and Edge Fest was like, oh, well, we're going to keep doing this, because they still were going to do the Toronto Edge Fest. And I think they tried to tour it again, maybe once. I'm not sure if it was as successful, but because I think we ended up flip-flopping and going with Somersault kind of against it, but we weren't going to go directly against it. The kind of memory is kind of foggy on the 98 one, but it wasn't as big as the 2000 one.
So Edgefest was kind of put out when you guys started yours?
Well, Edgefest we took across the country successfully, and we just wanted to make another one, and Somersault was that.
Right.
So the first one wasn't as broad in 98 as it was in 2000, from my knowledge. I think it might have been, but it was still really did well. But it was the 2000 one that was bigger, because we had Foo Fighters and Smashing Pumpkins, Deftones, Sum 41 had just started. Like, it was crazy. There was massive, Perfect Circle was on it. Like, there was a really big bands on it across the country, and super successful. So makes sense that the boys in OLP are gonna fire it up again this year.
Are they?
Hmm?
I didn't know that. Are they?
They're doing like three or four Somersaults.
No way.
But I guess it's kind of in conjunction with they've been doing American dates with Bush and Live.
Oh, so it makes sense
to kind of flop it and call it that. Back again.
I have several questions.
Yeah.
My first question is, aside from it being your idea, does OLP own anything, or do you just get paid what you would get paid as a band to be on a show like that? It just so happens that you organized it. Like, is the entity Somersault, does that have any value in and of itself?
Well, I mean, it has value in the sense that that's it's no different than like Perry Farrell and Lollapalooza. He owns the name, and anybody can put any festival, but if you call it Lollapalooza, he's involved. He's getting paid, you know. So I think if someone tried to do a Somersault without OLP, then it would be an issue. But the only value in it is just the fact that that's the name of the company that can pull out that tour.
So it's not like you get a cut from every bottle of water sold or anything
for the Somersault.
Yeah,
like if they do a Somersault.
No, like at the time in 2000.
Well, no, because you're still working with independent contractors on all of those things. So that whatever water getting sold is still being sold by that person who sells water at that venue. You know what I mean? Whether it's Molson Park at the time or whatever, it's still... I guess what you're saying is, do you just get a piece of everything sold, which isn't the case?
The answer is no, yeah. The second thing is...
are still owned by the concession themselves.
Second thing is, I think
there's been times where people have asked for a cut of that, but yeah, you gotta be pretty big to be saying I want 10% of your cut of the concessions.
You gotta be like Billy Joel big.
Well, I remember Van Halen were trying, and I don't know if that worked even.
I'm sure.
So, back then.
Second thing is there, as the organizers of Somersault, do you assume any risk? Like, do you guys have to put up the money to reserve the venues? Like, how does that part work?
Well, you're in partnership with the promoter, right? So whether it's
Live Donald Nation, K. Donald puts up the money to reserve Molson Park.
Like Live Nation would have the venue and all that like everything in the shopping list of a concert dialed. Yes. But yeah, any, are you saying like liability as like,
yeah, is there any risk for you guys as the organizers of it, like if things go sideways, or that all falls on the promoter?
You mean like if it goes all Firefest-y?
Yeah.
Like if you say you tried to steal ticket money and didn't have an event, well, that, yeah, then that your company would get sued. So yeah, you'd have to deal with that. That's why that guy's in jail, the Firefest guy, because he took money from pre-ticket sales and said this is going to be this, and it clearly wasn't that, so that makes sense that there's a legitimate lawsuit. Right?
Here's my next question. How do you decide the order of the bands? Like, were the Foos bigger than you in Canada at that time?
Well, they were all comparable, I'd say, at that point, like in terms of the venues that we were playing. I mean, OLP was playing arenas, and I think Smashing Pumpkins were playing arenas. At that time, Foo Fighters were probably big, but not as big. Like, they were playing 3,000-4,000 seat arenas. Now they're obviously bigger than everybody, but they were more kind of like a perfect, like, third from last band. You know what I mean?
And you guys were last.
No, the Pumpkins went on last, and we were totally fine with that.
Were Pumpkins bigger than you guys?
I'd say, because they were bigger everywhere else, you know. Maybe in Canada it was comparable, but in terms of, you know, their albums sold or whatever, it's obviously makes sense to have them headline.
My final question, it's maybe not interesting to you because you lived it, but I think for people that have no idea kind of how the mechanics of this work, it's really interesting, and that includes me. Is there a community vibe between shows, like, or backstage? Do you ride on each other's buses? Do you hang out with other bands, or it's kind of a bunch of independent camps that are kind of doing
this? It's a good, definitely community for sure. And good bands are usually good people. I mean, that tour, for example, the drummers on that tour was like Taylor, Dave, Josh Fries, you know, the hell's his name from the Pumpkins? Like, he's insane too. Like, just crazy drummers all over the place. Abe Cunningham from the Deftones, just awesome dudes and great drummers hanging out. So like, that to me was probably the best tour ever in terms of getting to watch wicked drummers from noon to you know, midnight.
And the hang
day. yeah Jimmy,
do drummers always like gravitate towards each other?
Yeah, but I mean, it depends on what your interests are, you know. Like, if you're there's the party guys that all hang out together, doesn't matter what you play. There's the straight group. There's the, you know, the people that want to just chat. You know, there's all kinds of different kind of cliques that everybody falls into personality-wise, and they're not necessarily deemed by your instrument, you know.
Like the clean ones, the guys that are staying clean probably gravitate towards each other.
Oh yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, the straight group, like, that don't there's like either the people that never did it or the people that can't do it anymore.
And then the birdsmen, they must gravitate towards each other.
Oh yeah, the coxsmen,
the wheelers,
the wheeler and the wheelsies. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the wheelers and the dealers.
Well, I'd say the wheelers are on the party crew. So if there's like, even if you're not, if your thing is like getting laid, then you don't, you know, you'll go along with whatever partying as well, just to try and get there. So you don't care about the partying. You'll let it slide, even if you're not doing it.
Drinking, I remember, drugging. I had a friend named Ben who was a professional birdsman.
Yeah.
And he was like, the way he honed his craft, he was like, whatever they're doing, do it harder. Karaoke, you're all in. Rollerblading, become awesome at rollerblading. Like, just be the life of the party and whatever party it is, and that is an irresistible quality.
Sure. I think also just trying really hard, you know, giving it your effort, really makes a difference.
You know, I guess so.
It's when you're like, if you show any element of like being too good for something, or that's not your thing, or you see, you know, that's just gonna create walls.
I guess so.
You have to be open and ready for anything, man.
So did you go on other people's buses between legs?
Oh yeah, all the time. I've woken up on buses, like, how to get here.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, what am I doing sleeping in here instead of the hotel room? Like, where am I?
Like, the bus is parked and turned off and you don't even know where you are?
Yeah, or whose bus I'm in.
Oh,
whose bus is this? Where am I? Yeah.
I guess you're just doing your rock and roll duty, you know?
Well, I guess when it's hotel rooms, you're kind of like that anyway. You get used to that feeling of, like, where am I every day? Like, you wake up, but you're looking at the hotel roof that's, you know, different than the one from yesterday. So you're continually in a, where am I? And that has nothing to do with the party from the night before. It's more just that continual Rolling Stone feeling of, like, I'm not sure where I am. And that when you're like, I don't know where I am, isn't like, I know I'm in this city. It's like, no, I'm in a whole other state, maybe, or a country right now.
So if there was a night off,
been driving for 12 hours.
If there's a night off on Somersault, does everyone go out for dinner, or you can't wait to get away for a night, or you just kind of break off into small groups?
Festivals are usually, usually they're not very long. It's not like you're on tour for months, so you're not sick of each other. So usually it's like, yeah, you do hang out with the other bands. But usually backstage is kind of like a restaurant. So they have catering and everybody's got plenty of drinks and everything. So that becomes just like a party.
A hang anyway.
Yeah, because everyone's sick and tired of hanging out with their own band, so everybody's going and hanging out with the other bands. And then everyone's getting all banged up. And like, I remember one scene where, like, I wasn't playing this festival, it was Lollapalooza, and I'm looking, there's Lars Ulrich getting a big massage on the front of his dressing room, and I look over and Soundgarden is like hanging and chatting, you know, with like the Screaming Trees guys, and then like you'd see other guys just like, I think it was like Dinosaur Jr. Jay Maskus was so hammered that he was like, they had to help him and like get him somewhere because he was like falling all over the place.
No.
But I remember that Live 8, when we played that.
Yeah.
Motley Crue, before they went on. I think I've told this story, but Duncan saw Mick Mars, like, rolling around in the dirt to get, like, stage clothes ready, like, to look dusty.
No.
He's, like, rolling around in leather, like, rolling around on the ground in the dirt.
In a brand new Danier jacket.
In brand.
Trying to get it,
yeah, brand
beat
new.
Up.
Well, it was kind of like, you know, like Mad Max Fury Road clothes. You know what I mean? Like the big leathers all over. All skinny, but like covered in different leather buckles and shit like that everywhere. So, yeah, but it looked a little too shiny, I guess. So he had to give it some living by rolling around in the ground like a horse.
Love it. Have you ever seen like someone from a band get too banged up and can't go on stage?
Yeah, well, the Screaming Trees that time, at Lollapalooza, they got so wasted before the show, the Van Conner brothers, that they couldn't, I don't even think, like, one of them fell down, like, on the stage and couldn't play anymore.
What?
Yeah, he was just, like, lying on his back.
So what did they do?
Huh? Well, he was, like, drinking Jaeger like, they had been up all night partying, and he was still drinking Jager from a bottle. And they were on at, like, 4 in the afternoon. So it had been all night and that afternoon. So he was just fucking gone.
Laying like on laying his down. Back. That's bad. That's so hardcore, man.
And I remember the Ramones were on that bill, and I don't know which one didn't show up or something. Like, I can't remember who.
Like, didn't make it?
Yeah, so it's like, I think Randy Biro or somebody was, like, playing bass for them on the show, like, had to cover. I don't know if, I think maybe it was, like, a border issue or something. But, yeah, most banged up not playing. Yeah, that happens. But festivals, like, I remember a festival, I'll mention a guy, I won't say who, but he's in one of those big bands that we mentioned before, but he, like, put a E-bomb on his tongue before he went on the stage and went out and played the set all banged up, and I was like, dude, you sucked. That didn't help you one bit.
Really?
Yeah. He was all crappy, couldn't play at all.
Did he think that would help?
Sure, he's an idiot. Mr. Pope, you know, like some guys just are idiot party guys. They think it's cool, and it's just like their professionalism is not up to par.
Well, I think in the
and not long after that guy I OD'd.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's what that kind of stuff will do for you.
Like, he slipped out. He's gone.
Yeah, like flatlined.
Oh wow!
And came back.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm so naive, man.
Yeah, it's like when you're partying so hard that you die and come back.
Yeah, that's hard. That's partying about as hard as you can party.
Like, yeah, because you don't die. But
I know under the umbrella category I'm saying, like,
how insane is that? It'll be like, man, I got to take it easy. After
that. I don't want to die again. Oh my God. But yeah. I know, like, if you're putting in time and you get to the venue at whatever 11 a.m. and you're not on till 7.
No, I know.
That man. Is it a sucks. Lot of tap dancing.
I know. Well, how about, like, you wake up in the hotel at 8 because you got dropped off there in the morning? And you're just sitting there till frickin' 8 p.m.
Oh.
Right?
What are you supposed to do?
Man, it sucks. Even though you're like, you can do kind of anything you want, it's just like, I don't want to. I just want to hurry up and get to 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Because, you know, after 6 months of that, you're just like, it becomes kind of like jail. Even the nicest hotel room, because you're like, what do? You start doing drugs or get drunk, and then that's just like a band-aid on nothing, because then you suck by the time you play, and now you have a habit you have to deal with that's probably going to come with you when you go home. You know, just all that stuff, those routines of filling long hours with, like, anything and everything, that stuff sticks.
I had a good conversation with a mutual friend of ours who's in the music business, who was saying how he realized that having a drink wise, you can justify it in any situation. You can justify it by saying, happy, like, you know what? I'm on the road, I'm going to have a drink. You know what? I'm off the road, I'm going to have a drink. You know what? We're going to have a night off, I'm going to have a drink. You can always have a drink and justify it if you want to have a drink.
I feel like shit. You know what? I'm going to have a drink.
I think we're going to have a drink. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It's a tough one, bud.
So, and time, when you fill it with time, that's the worst. Like, 10 hours. I don't care how strong your will is. It's just eventually 10 hours starts to look like, man, how good can you get at anything else?
Yeah.
You know? And then that, you know, once the family comes into it, when you're like, I know that there's this world that's not here that's like awesome, and I'm okay with spending 8 hours just sitting and watching it. That's when it really hurts, when it gets long.
You know, you hear of the like Shawn Mendes's and the Justin Bieber's, and you know how they're kind of trapped and how it would, I don't know, be hard. And it's funny because your instinct is to say like, yeah, must be nice. But you can see it. It wouldn't be fun. He can't go...
Yeah, you have to picture it. You have to picture it like your job that you do every day. That you're probably like, man, this like it's a grind sometimes.
Yeah.
That's what happens no matter what you're doing. And if you're doing something that you love, that's great. It makes it easier, but it's still not easy. There's no easy 8 hours of doing something trying to accomplish a goal, you know?
Right.
There's no way around. It's always going to be a pain in the ass, no matter what. So you just, like, A, have to pick something that you like, and B, don't pick something that you like too much, because then you won't like that anymore. That's the other part of it.
Careful what you wish for, kids.
Yeah.
That's why for us, renting a bus and driving to the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival is exactly what we want to do.
Yeah, right?
And it's like, only in a couple of days, and we're going to have a listening party of some of our tracks on the bus, right?
Yeah.
Andrew Axi, OG Bud House Bud, suggested we record a live pod on the bus. It's a good idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we should, you know, what we should do is we should just record some stuff, like maybe a segment or something.
And or whatever. See what comes out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a bad idea. A live show on the road is a pretty great idea, and a videographer's coming with us.
Yeah.
So we're going to capture everything, and the Dynalone Buds were kind enough to make t-shirts for everybody on the Bud Bus.
Yes.
Everybody on the Bud Bus gets a JFL rate at a hotel in Montreal, which was very nice of JFL.
Very nice.
It's an expensive city at an expensive time of year, but every little bit helps. And then everybody on the bus gets into the show for free, too.
Yeah, maybe we'll pick up some bagels for the buds.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, a fair amount of bagels for the drive back.
Well, that's the first thing we always do. Remember, we just like had 3 hours to kill for our Airbnb, so we just went there and crushed bagels on the street.
Go get a bag of bagels and some sour cream, or no, cream cheese.
Yeah,
and just party.
Or just sit there and crush bagels and like, just realize how much you're winning.
Watch the world go by. So in terms of our bigger plans this fall, safe to say we're going to have a few dates, probably with Side Door.
Yeah, definitely.
Where we get out in support of the wreckage.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't...
We'll do it in the little three bangers. Maybe a little three banger out east, a little three banger.
Love it.
Right? Yeah.
If you haven't heard us talk about Side Door before, both Jer and I are part of the Side Door family. SideDoorAccess.com. You can sign up to be a host.
Yeah.
All you have to do is have a venue that holds at least 20 people, and away you go. And you can host unique experiences, podcasts, comedians. Alan Cross is doing a Side Door tour, musicians.
I would say, look it up, and if you're kind of wondering what it is, just think about, like, being in someone's house or your own house and having somebody that's very talented there doing what they do in front of you and your friends, and you'll realize that it kind of takes you back to what the original idea of performance is. Because when you're in a club or a hall, it's like you kind of expect a show. But when you hear an actual the talent of a show in your house or a different kind of space, it makes it really, really special. And it's hard to explain.
And authentic and unique and memorable.
Yeah.
And also, would you rather play at Crocodile Rock to two people who just happened to be there drinking after work? Or you have to assume if people bought tickets to come see you specifically at a venue specifically, they must really want to see you.
Yeah.
So it just cuts all that stuff out.
It does.
Do you know what I mean?
Good times.
Hey, guess what, Jer? My people just walked in the door.
Oh, they did.
I'm going to go enjoy some summer.
Oh, yeah. It's just been pouring here for the last 10 minutes. It was sunny when we started. It was pouring for the last 10 minutes. But I think it's going to be sunny again in 10 minutes.
There you go.
So I'm going to do the same. I'm going to get my summer on over here.
Yeah? Yeah, we're going to go to the lake and tow the big tube behind the boat.
The big tube?
Yeah.
You ever been hurt? You ever been hurt on one of those things?
Well, I'm always driving the boat. But it's a big Connolly four banger.
Okay.
And Toolsy helped me blow it up last night. You put the blow function on the shop vac and blow it up. But you need you need a spotter, and you need some weight in the couch. So the girls need either put on some concrete shoes, or we need a couple ringers to keep it down.
Concrete shoes. I like it.
Good chatting, bud.
Talk to you soon.